Companions with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hello and welcome to Robots episode 104. My name is Jana, and in this episode, we'll hear from Paolo Dario, who is exploring possibilities to create robot companions through collaborative research. But first, as always, let's get the latest news and developments in robotics with Christine.
Thank you, Jana. In a press release, US company Willow Garage has announced the creation of the Open Source Robotics Foundation, or OSRF. Brian Gerke, Director of Open Source Development at Willow Garage and the OSRF CEO, describes the mission of the new nonprofit as supporting the development, distribution, and adoption of open source software for use in robotics research, education, and product development. As a first contract, the OSRF will provide an adapted version of the popular Gazebo robotics simulator for the DARPA's Humanoid Challenge. For now, the Foundation's website, www.osrfoundation.org, is low on details. But its board includes some big names, such as Helen Greiner, co-founder of iRobot and currently CEO of the Stealth Mode Sci-Fi Works, Wolfram Burkhardt, professor at the University of Freiburg and co-author of the influential book Probabilistic Robotics, and Ryan Gariepi, co-founder and CTO of Clearpath Robotics. We will report on news as they unfold. In other news, a paralyzed woman has completed the London Marathon with the help of a bionic suit. In 2007, now 32-year-old Claire Lomas had been left paralyzed from the chest down following a horse riding accident. In spite of the resulting complete lack of control or feelings in both of her legs, Lomas was able to walk 2 to 3 kilometers per day using a rewalk system and completed the 42.195 kilometers in 16 days. The system, designed in Israel and marketed by Argo Medical Technologies, allows paraplegics to regain mobility by shifting their weight. For more information on OSRF and the rewalk system, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
Paolo Dario is professor at the Biorobotics Institute at the Scuola Superiore Sant'Anna in Pisa, Italy, where he supervises a team of about 150 researchers and PhD students. He is also the head of the EU Future Emerging Technologies flagship candidate called Robot Companions for Citizens. Through interdisciplinary collaboration, this initiative looks at radical new approaches for designing machines and how we might deploy them in our society. Per interviewed Paolo Dario at the Robot Darling conference in Sweden last winter.
I know you worked a lot with interdisciplinary teams trying to merge knowledge from different areas and to increase progress in both of the areas, maybe, where we use robotics to study animal behavior and we study animal behavior to make our robots better. Could you say something about your view on these interdisciplinary teams?
Yeah, my view is extremely favorable. I think it's the way we should go now, from now on. So I'm going to present today this concept of the three waves of innovation. Okay, the first wave was built in the 50s and 60s, even 70s, with the basic knowledge in mechanics, the growth of electronics, computer science, and so on, control. And this originated industrial robots. And that time, robotics included different disciplines, but was essentially very focused on dexterous machine tools. Then, in the 80s and 90s mostly, Then what happened was that new disciplines were added to robotics, like AI mostly, and machine learning, you know, cognition, these kind of things. So intelligence at large, and human-machine interaction also. And so the robot started to get out of the fence and going close to people. And this is where we are now. And so for sure, we need interdisciplinarity here. We already need some sort of transdisciplinarity. That is, we need to develop fully the mechatronics paradigm. The mechatronics paradigm is interdisciplinarity in engineering, if you will. Different disciplines like mechanics, sensors, control, actuators, energy, communication, and so on. Control, of course. What we need to add to this is the ability to develop machines that can interact with people. So the ability of taking into account the human attitudes toward machines, you know, preferences, anthropological situations, culture, so on.
Understand our way of behavior and incorporating that in their actions.
Exactly. And this is the second big step. That is, now, I would say, in my opinion, is a big challenge. Okay, so it's a technological challenge, and also is involving other disciplines related to social sciences and also humanities. And then the third wave will come soon. And so what we need is to introduce or to change some paradigms, or the paradigms by which we design robots. And I believe that to do that, we need a substantial injection of scientific knowledge into robotics. Okay, this is what I'm convinced of. So we need to talk to neuroscientists, but we also need to talk to nanotechnologists. We need to talk to people who know about chemistry, new materials, and of course, more and more about cognitive sciences, and also about ethics. Ethics is a quite obvious problem that has to be tackled, has to be investigated, not as a problem, but as an opportunity, in my opinion.
How do we design a good system rather than a system?
Yeah, actually, in ethics, you know, has different facets. Okay, one is purely related to good design. I mean, honesty towards the customers. Okay, towards the users, and this is certainly a very important paradigm that we roboticists should always consider. Never harm, for example. But you know, this is something that good engineering is able to manage pretty well. Second point is are the choices on what we do. So that is the ethics for the roboticist. And in my opinion, this is the real issue now. We can design virtually everything. So we are, as a roboticist, the same level of of questions, a very important question that physicists had decades ago, so about the nuclear bomb, the fusion bomb, so what to do with science. And now we have a similar problem, what to do with engineering. And that being, I think that there is a problem of culture of and choices. And then there is the third level of ethics, that is the ethics of the robots. Okay, that is the one that actually fascinates a lot of people. But I must say is ill posed the problem, because at this time there is no real need for any ethics for a robot, because the robot is certainly not able to define its own principles or set of values.
It's not advanced enough yet.
Not yet. And so I think the two ones, the two first problem of ethics are the important one, together with legal issues. actually legal issues at the beginning they were sort of confused with ethics, okay? Actually, we are now talking about ethics, legal and social issues, all together in a way. And legal issues are a real bottleneck now for the introduction of robots in society. Because robotics is a new technology, because years ago there was not such attention to issues related to damaging people, responsibility of the designer, of the constructor, of the manager. So who has the responsibility for any damage that the robot could make is a big problem that has to be solved. Otherwise, the robotics industry cannot develop. So it's a crucial problem, this one. More than ethics, you know, which is, of course, a very interesting philosophical issue.
And it will become important far future when robots actually become sentient beings, if they ever become that.
Yeah.
Very interesting. You worked on the Robot Cub, on iCub project. You can speak a bit about that. It was also open source. That's an aspect we're interested in.
Yeah, this is an aspect that certainly characterizes these systems. And this is, in my opinion, they are certainly, they've been pioneers in this area. And now this is becoming more and more accepted by all. You know, but the main reason is that robotics is, in a way, not anticipating but participating in a trend. The trend is networking. Okay, so we now, and this is happening everywhere, from the factory to the house to the city urban environment. So everything is connected, and obviously the robots are part of this system. They will take a lot of benefit of it, because the future internet, as it is called, will involve high speed, high bandwidth, but it will also allow to develop, control, and use robots that are much better than today's. And also, so for example, so the open source, the sharing of hardware resources will have an analogous impact as the software resources. So in this sense, in my opinion, there is no surprise. It's a trend that will happen. But what is I think more important, and many people probably don't realize, is the synergistic role that networks and robots will have.
Oh, okay.
It is while in the recent past the main interest of many roboticists was to develop the intelligent robot. I mean, the intelligent autonomous robot. Now, at least as an intermediate step, it is much more realistic to think of a robot as part of a network. So, as part of what is called ambient assisted. Or ambient intelligence, if you will. So ambient intelligence is helping a robot very much to take decisions. So rather than just reasoning alone, the robot can take advantage of the network. So of sensors, of beacons, GPS, of course, when available. So the robot become a moving machine in with a degree of autonomy, of course, but in a highly interconnected environment.
Yeah, part of a system rather than just. And this is also a thing I've reflected over in other cases, that we see that the car is the revolution,
exactly.
But that's not
exactly
really the case. The car, the road, and the filling station.
Absolutely.
Was actually this what we can call the network that made it whole possible. If we just had the car, but we had the roads, the old roads, we couldn't drive anyway.
Exactly.
And if we didn't have a filling station,
exactly,
we couldn't do it anyway.
Yeah. So what was missing in robotics, in fact, were infrastructures, you know, and still are, but they are coming. So in the factories, in factories there are infrastructures. infrastructures. Actually, factory is a very structured environment. But even open space, let's say, and urban environment and the communication system. I mean,
we have CAD drawings for houses and objects and everything.
Yeah, exactly. All the environment is becoming, we could say, intelligent. And this is very, very important for the robot itself. So I'm very optimistic on the fact that the robots could accelerate their development and practical deployment, because this communication essentially helps robots and also helps humans, because the robot is always monitored when needed. And the robot knows the environment better than it could do by reasoning or sensing or whatever. So I think this is probably more revolutionary than some people would have expected. And in a way, it's more than just open source. I mean, of course, it's also open source, and the open source platform are very, very important. But there is even more. It's an open system.
Open data, we could say, because we share data. About the data I collect as a sensor will be shared with some other unit. And then, of course, we have all units that use them, just share
but
the data.
This will happen also for cars. You know, for example, if we come to a crossing in the near future, cars will communicate so that my car already knows, or my motorcycle. I'm a biker, so I know that this can be very dangerous. So I know my bike knows that there is a car coming close to the at high speed, maybe at the crossing. And so my bike tells me, and the same will happen with robotics. So rather than reasoning on the environment, there will be easy to use communication. And this, you know, is really lowering the threshold that is needed to deploy robots in real environment. I'm very, very confident on the impact that this fusion or this integration between robotics and networks is going to play in the near future.
And I also think that it's likely that we will start to change the environment we have to suit the robots to. Because we see the benefit of using robots, and then, for instance, putting up robot-friendly electrical outlets, that's not a problem, because we want our robots to do what we want it to do, and then we, of course, has to help it. We've done that with any other system we've had.
Absolutely.
Through the times that we everything adapts to each other.
Rails, tramways, roads.
Clearly,
yes.
You were also the president of IEEE RAS. Could you tell us a bit about that period in your life? I guess it was a run.
Yeah, it was a very, very exciting opportunity. Actually, I've been the first European president of Robotics and Automation Society. Now, there have been other colleagues, Bruno Siciliano, and the next is Raja Shatila from France, who have been elected. But I had the privilege to be the first. So in a way, to bring the flavor, if you will, at least the background, the culture of Europe and the strength of European research there, and to combine with the strength of American and Asian colleagues and many others. For example, one of the things, I, of course, it was very nice working with so many colleagues. Actually, robotics at that time had about 5,000 members of the Robotic Automation Society. Now it's coming close to 9,000. So robotics is becoming one of the largest societies within the electrical, say, engineering area, which is totally unexpected years
ago. Fundamental growth.
Exactly. And one of the things I was able to propose and to launch at the time when I was a president was the summer school, you know, school, robotics school. And this is very interesting because, frankly speaking, there was no such tradition in the US and not in Asia. While in Europe, we already had a very active tradition of summer schools for PhD students. Thanks to European programs, we were able to create a network of students. So our students, our PhD students were already used to spend weeks together in a secluded place to study, work, and familiarize. And I brought this concept and this idea to the global world.
It's so powerful, I think.
Yeah, and I must say, everybody are very, very happy about this. So it's a tradition that has continued, creating a network of alumni, if you will, of robotics and automation. And so favoring the investment in the future, you know, creating a community of people who knows each other, you know, who are in a network. It's very important for the progress of science and technology.
Yeah, it's always been so that when you get an idea, you have a problem. And then if you know the person that can help you with that problem, progress is very much accelerated.
Exactly. We anticipated Facebook in a physical manner, I would say. But then, of course, by using social networks, these communities continue.
Yeah, and they live much more vibrantly.
Exactly, exactly.
I know about that with the monks, where they were writing letters to each other, and there was one monk living in Paris. He was the center. So he got all the mails and he read it and said, "Ah, this is going to him and that's going to him." And he sent Bernoulli.
A sort of hub.
Yeah, he sent Bernoulli the question on why is the air pressure lower in a mountain rather than at sea level. And Bernoulli got the letter, and from there on we have his work. So it's just amazing that they truly work.
Absolutely. That is another important hint here about transdisciplinary, about merging disciplines, about convergence. You know, this is another very important message related to the future of robotics. Okay, we need more and more convergence of different knowledge and technology. But this is something that is in the DNA of robotics. You know, robotics could not exist at different levels without this idea of interdisciplinarity, multidisciplinarity, convergence of disciplines, ability to break barriers between disciplines, which is one of the limitations of traditional courses, you know, which are sometimes very specialized, sometimes even too much.
Mm-hmm. Now you're working with the FAT program and the companions, robotic companions. Would you like to speak a bit about that project?
Yes, I'm glad that this question came at the end, because actually it comes also at the end of a process that I briefly outlined. Okay, I think that we were able, in a way, to drive, because I was part of the working group that elaborated this concept for the Commission, for FET. And then we were able to agree with a large community, including roboticists, but not only roboticists, okay? Communities in the field of science, many of them, to gather, to put together resources for this very ambitious competition, because it's a very ambitious competition. It's a very ambitious call. Duration more than 10 years, funding more than 1 billion euros expected. It's the first time in European history, European research history, that such an ambitious, long-term, federated effort is launched. Two flagships will be selected at the end of this year and launched in 2013, maybe fully operational in 2014, but there were 26 applications to the call, Six were selected, and one was our proposal, so Robot Companions for Citizens. And the name, I think, was very carefully selected. Okay, robot, because we wanted to use the icon, you know, the word robots. Even if some people are saying, well, we could use machines, artifacts, other things, but we are proud that robots are where they are, you know, and so we want to state that those are robots. Companions, you know, companions is an assistant, but is more than an assistant. Is a machine that has some level of empathy with the person, and reciprocally. Could be nothing more than a pet at home, you know, but at least that level of empathy is needed in a reciprocal way. So the companion feels something and the person feels something.
Yeah, we saw that about the bomb disposal robot operator that said, I don't want a new one, I want you to fix my, what was it, Scooby?
Yes,
exactly. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
We also heard it from Professor Brooks when he said that the people that programmed KISS and also the other one actually hang a sheet of cloth between themselves and the robot because they didn't like the robot staring at them. Although they programmed the routines that stared.
Well, but you know, this is the same that happens with Professor Ishiguro Geminoid. You know, sometimes it's quite embarrassing when the robot looks at you. So we have to find the right ways, the proper way to interact. And then the final keyword of the proposal is citizens. That means everybody, really. We intend to do this for everybody, not for elderly people and only, not for Europeans only. We like to develop a new generation of machines that could help humankind to solve problems when needed. And of course, that would be friends and never enemies. You know, recently I had the opportunity to see again iRobot. You know, in a way, the movie iRobot is the heaven and the hell together, because the performance of the robots are something like we would really dream of achieving. At the same time, there are episodes in which the robots become really enemies. And of course, this is science fiction, but this is also a widely perceived fear by many people. So we should always consider this not to be only technocrats. And this is why, and I go back to the initial point, certainly some concerns are totally ungrounded. I mean, there are no reasons for. But we have to be humble and understand the reasons of the people in
and
having...
And explain to them why it's unlikely. Take their fears seriously and show them carefully why this is not the case.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for today. Although not the focus of today's episode, Paolo Dario is also very well known for his work in the fields of medical robotics, biorobotics, mechatronics, and nanoengineering. And we hope to have him back with us to talk about those facets of his work in one of our future episodes. For now, you can let us know what you think about robot companions or any other topic discussed in our episodes by posting on our website, robotspodcast.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye. Companions with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.